This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A ban on abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy is now in effect in Texas as of September 1. The law is novel in that it allows private citizens and organizations to sue abortion providers and others who aid in those abortions. It also provides a $10,000 bounty for those groups or individuals. Conservative lawmakers in other states, including Ohio, are watching closely both this new Texas law and the fate of another similar one in Mississippi. So could elected officials in our states here enact similar legislation after the U.S. Supreme Court declined to strike down Texas's law, a move abortion access advocates say gravely endangers Roe v. Wade. Joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about the quickly changing legal and political landscape around abortion rights, we have University of California, Irvine, Law School Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy founding director, Dr. Michelle Goodwin, who is also a chancellor's professor at UC Irvine, and the author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women and the Criminalization of Motherhood. Dr. Goodwin, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
We also have the chair of Miami University's Department of Justice and Community Studies and executive director of the university's Menard Family Center for Democracy, Dr. John Foran. Dr. Foran, we're glad to have you with us as well.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And for those of you listening, if you have questions or comments or thoughts, if you're concerned about these new abortion laws, or if you're supportive of these new abortion laws, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter, where we'll look for your comments and your tweets there to share with the rest of our listening audience. Dr. Goodwin, I'll start with you. There has been a lot of commentary about this law that has emerged out of Texas and the Supreme Court's decision not to address it. Is it as serious for abortion rights advocates as it seems?
Oh, absolutely. It's serious not only for abortion rights advocates, but it's serious for our democracy. And I'll tell you why. The law itself, as you mentioned, bans abortion after 6 weeks. It's a time in which most persons, women, would not even know that they are pregnant. Not only that, it veers away from how laws traditionally are enacted in that there is a person at the state level who's responsible for its enforcement. What Texas has decided to do is to make it difficult for people to have standing in order to challenge this particular legislation. And so they've deputized citizens to be the enforcers of the law. But the law goes further in that it allows individuals to sue anyone who aids or abets in the termination of a pregnancy. The law purposely does not put guardrails around that. So seemingly it leaves it open for virtually anybody who in any way aids $5, $10, a ride to a clinic, checking someone in to a clinic, discussing their options. It makes them vulnerable to the law. And those individuals then are able to sue and recover at least $10,000 if they're successful in that litigation, and also recover attorney's fees. This bounty speaks of times that date back to the antebellum period in our country, where there were fugitive slave laws, where people were deputized to go after, surveil, hunt down, capture individuals who were seeking their freedom. But I mentioned that this is dangerous about democracy and not just reproductive health rights and justice, and that's critically important, but dangerous for democracy in that when there was a challenge of the law that went to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court responded with a shadow docket. In less than a page, the Supreme Court dispensed basically with this matter and did not bother to sign the justice who was responsible for writing the opinion didn't bother to sign it and said that, well, we're really not sure that there will be any action under this particular law, while already there were websites being put up so that individuals could list people that they thought were aiding and abetting individuals who are seeking to terminate a pregnancy. Now, this might mean very little if it weren't for the fact that terminating a pregnancy is a constitutional right. So this is why it's very challenging for democracy and concerning for democracy, because we're not talking about something where there have been no laws, no protections, anything like that. We're talking about the overturning of Roe v. Wade and a legacy of cases that have protected women's rights to terminate a pregnancy.
The number to join our conversation is 513-419-7100. Let's turn now to Dr. John Foran. He is chair of Miami University's Department of Justice and Community Studies and executive director of the university's Menard Family Center for Democracy. What is your understanding about why the Supreme Court declined to address this Texas case, which seems to have national implication as laid out by Dr. Goodwin?
Well, it's always difficult to read the minds of the justices in that sense, and especially in this situation where they have used what is called the shadow docket to make a major policy change ultimately without, as Dr. Goodwin pointed out, without having a signed full opinion or the benefit of full-blown arguments and consideration of all of the relevant legal and political factors there. So it's hard to say why they did it, but I would say that it's hard to overestimate how important this potentially is in the not in the sense of declaring the Texas law to be constitutional, if you want to put it that way, because they didn't actually do that formally speaking. They didn't rule on the merits necessarily, but the decision itself sent a signal very clearly that as the dissenters pointed out in this case, that the doorway may be open now for challenges to precedents that have been settled for decades, ultimately. And it's difficult to know what that will mean around the country because, you know, in state after state, we've had lots of restrictions passed over a long period of time. Ohio, for instance, we have one of the most restrictive webs of abortion regulation you'll find in the country. But some of those most restrictive regulations that are already on the books are currently not enforced because of lower courts' understanding that Roe v. Wade is still good law and that essentially it's an anticipation that if a challenge would get to the Supreme Court, the court would uphold that what it called in 1992 the essential holding of Roe. This Texas decision on the shadow docket, which I think is open to a lot of criticism in that sense, but it raises lots of new questions, and I think will send signals. We're likely to see a lot of movement legislatively and also in court because of this ruling.
513-419-7100. And Dr. Foran, I would like you to expand on that when you talk about a lot of legislation and possible litigation as well. Are you talking about maybe copycat legislation in states across the country? You did mention Ohio moments ago. Many of our listeners probably remember back in 2019 when Governor DeWine signed legislation that banned abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected, but that was blocked by a federal judge. So do we anticipate that other lawmakers are chomping at the bit to do something similar to what Texas has done?
Well, I think here in Ohio, we're likely to see that relatively shortly. The General Assembly goes back into session next week, and we've already heard at the local level, individual legislators pointing to the Texas example as a model that they would like to follow. And as you said, we already have on the books here in Ohio a six-week ban on abortion that has been enjoined by the federal courts. So it's too early to tell yet here, actually, but I think we will see this relatively soon. That I think there is clearly motivation to enact some new statutes here at the state level. And I guess I would echo too something that Dr. Goodwin pointed out earlier. Not only is this about a straightforward challenge to longstanding abortion rights, but this idea that private citizens are deputized, basically, which as the dissenters in the Texas case that the Supreme Court pointed out, this apparently was written into law intentionally as a way to get around court challenges, because theoretically there aren't state actors now enforcing this. And so people are just ordinary people under the Texas law with no direct connection even to the parties involved are given bounties basically to file suit. This is a very unusual way to enforce a statute. And it's, in this case, it was clearly designed to avoid the court challenge. And I think it's significant to point out that the Supreme Court did not respond to that clear sort of sidestepping of jurisdiction there and instead allowed it. So it's hard to know, even beyond abortion rights context, how that really novel use of tort law basically may play out in other circumstances.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation, or email talk at wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dr. Michelle Goodwin is a chancellor's professor at the University of California, Irvine, and the founding director of the Law School Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy, as well as the author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women, and the Criminalization of Motherhood. Dr. Goodwin, this seems to be a battle looming that abortion opponents have wanted for a long time, that perhaps there would finally be some sort of state law that could make its way to the Supreme Court that would have a conservative bent by the time it arrived, and ultimately overturn Roe v. Wade. Is that what your understanding of the situation is? Is that what we're seeing now, if there is a case to make its way to the Supreme Court like this, that the days of Roe v. Wade could be numbered?
That's a very significant aspect of what we're seeing now. So to set the stage just a bit, we're coming from a time in which the efforts behind the anti-abortion movement had been really quite violent. Between 1977 and now, there had been nearly 50 bombings, full destruction of clinics that performed abortion, mass shootings at abortion clinics, people chaining themselves to abortion clinics. Those were the responses of the 70s, 80s, 90s. The mass shootings still occur. The targeting of medical providers and the killing of medical providers, that was how the movement looked. That was the movement. And at some point, there was a sense that the political sphere needed to be used. And there was then a turn in strategy, which has been very successful. What many people have said is that the movement was really about finding the one case. Well, I just disagree slightly with that and just say that the movement was really about enact many laws, see how many cases could make their way through courts, so that the Roe legacy would be chipped away by a thousand strikes rather than just by one harsh blow. And I'd be remiss if we didn't set the stage for what Roe was, right? So 1973, the Supreme Court striking down a Texas law that criminalized abortion, and it was a 7-2 opinion. And it's worth noting that five of those seven justices were Republican appointed. The justice that actually wrote the opinion in the case, Justice Blackmun, was appointed to the court by Richard Nixon. So it's a very clear position by conservatives on the court that women should have the right to be able to terminate a pregnancy. And the Roe decision itself is actually very instructive for history. As Justice Blackmun said, abortion had not always been illegal in the United States at all. And he laid out a very clear framework about the stigmatization, the stereotypes, the burdening of health, the burdening of mental health, all of these various things that would interfere with a woman's life if she were forced or coerced by the state to carry a pregnancy to term. That legacy, those principles were upheld later in Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which is really the doctrine under which much of this operates today. And it's worth noting that the two justices who played a pivotal role in writing that opinion, Justices O'Connor and Kennedy, again, both Republican appointed to the court. So if you think about it, when we think about the Republican legacy on the court, it's been that. What we see today is something very different, both in terms of the courts and in terms of the legislative movement that have undergirded the anti-abortion movement. And it's worth getting into that conversation because conservatism today is not what conservatism was in the 1970s, 80s, 90s, or even early 2000s. There is a very different kind of branch of what we're looking at today, which is heavily influenced by evangelical sources, And I'd also be remiss if I didn't point out, and we can find this easily online, the federal government tracks this, but also by white supremacist and nationalist movement. So you have different cohorts of groups that now have found themselves invested in anti-abortion legislation and also practices and policies.
We're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Goodwin and Dr. Foran just ahead. We've also got some phone calls to take. You can join us at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. A little later in this program, a man arrested in Ohio allegedly planning mass shootings of women on college campuses in this state. He was reportedly a frequent visitor to websites dedicated to the incel movement, men who believe they are unable to attract women sexually. We explore this case. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our conversation about the new Texas abortion ban and whether the restrictive law could influence lawmakers here to act similarly. We're joined on Cincinnati Edition today to talk about this quickly changing legal and political landscape around abortion rights by University of California, Irvine Law School Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy founding director Dr. Michelle Goodwin, who is also a Chancellor's Professor at UC Irvine and the author of the book Policing the Womb, Invisible Women and the Criminalization of Motherhood. Also joining us is Miami University's Department of Justice and Community Studies Chair and Executive Director of the University's Menard Family Center for Democracy, Dr. John Foran. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. We'll get to the phone lines now, starting with Shannon. Hi, Shannon. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I first of all want to say this is a brilliant discussion of this topic. I have done a lot of listening, and I haven't heard anything explained so well as I'm hearing right now.
Thank you.
I'm particularly touched by, you're welcome, Dr. Newman's first comment about the threat to democracy. And it's a very tricky situation, the way they did things in Texas. I have not been able to understand it very well myself. But I think what's so important is this almost hiding the threat to democracy under a topic that is so close to so many people's hearts, you know, the termination of pregnancy or not, the right of a woman to terminate a pregnancy, the right of the baby. And I think those are huge questions, but I think the way it's being done in Texas is sort of putting that out in the way so that people don't recognize what's actually happening, which is what Dr. Newman said so well at the beginning.
Shannon, thank you so much for taking some time to share your thoughts with us. We do appreciate that. And Dr. Goodwin, would you like to take a moment to respond to Shannon's comments?
I would, and thank you so much for those comments, Shannon. And that's really where our attention should be, and that's the vulnerability of our democracy with states passing laws that are directly contradictory to constitutional law, directly antithetical to our Constitution. So think about this. Think about 1954 when the Supreme Court struck down laws that segregated schools. That was a challenging conversation and time for our nation, but it was understood that we should be on the right side of history with that. It was a time for separate but equal to fall. Now, the full name of the case is Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas. Now, imagine that there is a state outside of Kansas that says, well, we don't have to listen to the Supreme Court. That just applies to Kansas. It doesn't apply to us in Louisiana. It doesn't apply to us in Texas. And then imagine the case coming to the Supreme Court just a few years later and the Supreme Court saying, you know what, you're right. Our precedent has no value. And when you think about the role of Chief Justice John Roberts, this has been his battle on the court, particularly defined over the last few years. So what's interesting about this is that The Chief Justice is not necessarily a fan of reproductive rights. He does not stand out as a liberal. He is not. He is a conservative. He's Republican appointed, but he dissented in last week's case, in the case a couple weeks ago out of Texas. And principally, I believe that he did so because he cares about the rule of law. He cares about the legacy of the court. He cares about his own legacy. Interestingly enough, he also sided with the liberals on the court in the 2019-2020 term in a case that is a kind of version of Brown v. Board of Education, but challenged. That case June Medical v. Rousseau. And it was a case that involved a Louisiana law that was identical to a Texas law that had been struck down by the court just a few years before. Absolutely identical. And the Chief Justice concurred with the liberals on the court, and he specifically articulated that he was doing so because precedent mattered. You can't just have a Supreme Court rule one way 1 year and then have a couple of new people come into the court and suddenly all of the deliberation, the reasoning, the time spent just simply goes away. You can't have that for democracy.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We have Jimbo on the line. Hi, Jimbo. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. It is an interesting discussion. Although it is notable that both of your guests are clearly advocates for abortion and they're very much against this law, I'd like to just point out a couple things. There was a remark that the use of citizens being deputized by the Texas law to enforce the abortion ban is something new or novel. That's absolutely not the case. Here in Ohio, we have sunshine laws that are what are known as in re laws, where a citizen brings suit to enforce the sunshine laws in the place of the attorney general. And in such event, the citizen, if he prevails at trial, he also collects all attorney's fees, as well as a monetary amount of a fine for each sunshine law violation. So there's really nothing new or novel about the Texas law in that respect. And secondly, it is a little presumptuous in 2021 at this date to talk about abortion as being a constitutional right. I know the Warren Court said it was based on a right to privacy, but that ruling is increasingly viewed as tenuous by legal scholars on all sides. It's not expected to hold up. It's why liberals are very upset about a potential challenge to Roe v. Wade, because the Warren Court, which infamously treated the Constitution as a living document, has been usurped by Antonin Scalia in the doctrine of originalism, which really casts a lot of the rulings of the Warren Court into a
I've got about 15 seconds left for you, Jimbo.
Particularly the ruling on abortion as being a constitutional right. That's really not the case, no matter what the Warren Court ruled over 50 years ago.
Jimbo, we do appreciate you listening and calling and taking the time to share your thoughts with us. Thank you very much for the phone call. I'm going to give both of our guests the opportunity to respond to Jimbo. I'll let you know we've got about a couple of minutes left, so I'll split that time between you. Let's go to Dr. John Foran from Miami University first.
Thank you. Yeah, I would say a couple of things, basically, about the implications of the Texas case, for instance. And one is, I wholeheartedly agree that that with Dr. Goodwin's point about the importance of precedent here. If you go back to 1992, and I think it's not accurate to say that there is not an established constitutional right in this context. There clearly is. That is why, for instance, we have various lower court holds on statutes at the state level, because at least in the view of those lower courts, that precedent, at least its essential holding from Roe versus Wade from 1992, the Casey case, is still understood broadly within the courts. And that's not an issue of how one feels about abortion rights one way or the other. It's about the role of precedent in a constitutional democracy, ultimately. And in 1992, when the Supreme Court Casey upheld its essential holding in Roe, as it called it. It pointed specifically to these concerns about the legitimacy of the court that go far beyond abortion rights. Because if you think about it, how do we know what the Constitution even means? At least as we have it interpreted through the judicial system, we are essentially looking at past decisions and relying on those and trying to figure out what they mean and go forward with our legislation and government activity accordingly. So whenever the court does something like it has done in the Texas case, which is essentially allow the law to go into effect without explicitly talking about the viability of the precedent, it opens the door to confusion, it opens the door to instability, and if that applies not only that concern about the legitimacy and stability of constitutional law is not just an abortion rights context issue, but it's across the board and lots of issues that conservatives care a great deal about as well. And I would just quickly say one other thing with the politics of this area. I would argue that it's much more unpredictable what would happen if Roe versus Wade is explicitly overturned than what may appear to be the case. Because
I do want to make sure that we get Dr. Goodwin in here. I've only got about 20 seconds left. That was good information, Dr. Farrell. But Dr. Foran, excuse me. Dr. Goodwin, please. I've got about 15 to 20.
Let me just quickly say this, is that the caller's information was actually inaccurate. All studies show that the majority of Americans support an individual's ability to be able to terminate a pregnancy. And if we were to think about textualism and originalism, the original text in the United States Constitution upholds liberty, privacy, freedom. And so that's constitutionally embedded. And what could be more central to a person's life and dignity than being able to have bodily autonomy?
That's right.
Let me finally say,
I think we've got a recorded segment on the other side that limits our flexibility here. I'm so sorry. But like our caller Shannon said, you were both so enlightening and helpful for this. And I hope that we can have you both back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.